The Israel Report with Rolien Marks.
Rolien Marks, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. Well, now I'm hungry, Howard.
For shakshuka.
But you've given me a good idea. Shakshuka it is.
So it's very popular in Israel as a breakfast dish, isn't it?
Extremely popular. In fact, when I come off there, I'm off to breakfast. And now I know what I'm having for breakfast.
It's so funny.
Thank you to everybody who suggested shakshuka.
The power of suggestion. It's just incredible. It's a Middle Eastern dish, isn't it?
Well, there's some debate around where it actually originates from. The likely story is that it's North African.
Ah, okay.
And as many people may or may not know, when the State of Israel was created in 1948, Jews were driven out of the countries or the Arab countries and the North African countries. And many of them came to Israel and, of course, brought with them these incredible recipes. So we have delicious dishes like shakshuka, like chayme, like various others because of our various galuyot, because of the ingathering of the exiles. So that is what makes Israel extra special.
Absolutely amazing. Right, let's start with some of the stories. And the first thing we wanted to talk about was Munich.
Well, can you believe that on Monday it will be 50 years since the Munich Olympics and that dreadful, dreadful massacre that saw 11 Israeli athletes and their coaches murdered at the 1972 Olympics in Munich. I mean, I don't think any of us, we've seen the footage. If people watched live during that event, you would have remembered Jim McKay, who was the anchor for ABC, saying, "They're all gone." So just to put into perspective what happened, 11 members of the Israeli Olympic team, some were fencers, some were wrestlers, and their respective coaches had been sort of kidnapped and then murdered by Black September terrorists. These were Palestinian terrorists. In fact, Mahmoud Abbas would have been part of the senior leadership of Fatah that signed off the checks that carried out this horrendous, horrendous attack. And the words of Golda Meir, who was the prime minister at the time, saying that once again, Jewish blood being spilled on the streets and on the soil of Germany. Very, 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 very painful. And now on Monday, we have a delegation from Israel, including our president, Isaac Herzog, who will participate in a memorial ceremony in Munich, in Germany. And of course, it hasn't been without controversy, because in the last couple of weeks, we know that the German government has looked to try and find some kind of financial settlement with the families of those who had been murdered, the families saying that what was the number that was given to them, an absolute insult. I mean, we know you can't quantify the price of a life, but they said it's absolutely ludicrous what they were offered. However, in the last couple of days, a satisfactory settlement has been reached, and families will join our president, as well as survivors. And I was actually very privileged to interview Yehuda Weinstein a couple of years ago, who was a survivor of the massacre. An extraordinary story. Will be headed to Munich to mark 50 years of the massacre.
At the time, the behavior, the reaction, the approach of the German government was quite a strange one, wasn't it?
It was strange. You know, there was definitely the feeling that they didn't understand the urgency, they didn't understand the veracity of this kind of event, this kind of terror act. You know, they were prepared to negotiate. We don't negotiate with terrorists. It really was extraordinary the way that they had handled it. And the Germans were kind of seen as almost being blackmailed into cooperating with them, and that's not how Israel deals with terrorists. Very, very famous quote by Golda Meir saying, "We do not negotiate with terrorists."
Is that where it actually came from?
That's where it actually came from. Golda Meir, you know, gave us some of the most important quotes in Jewish history.
Absolutely,
that
that's
being
true.
One of them.
But I had no idea that's where it came from. I've used it on my kids for years, and I had no idea. I had no idea that that was where it actually all started. Wow, fascinating. The other
big, you know what they say, yeah. You don't negotiate with cats, toddlers.
Yes,
and terrorists.
Right, absolutely right. Okay, let's talk about Ken Roth, his legacy at Human Rights Watch. He's retiring, gosh.
Well, I don't think that Kenny is going to be missed by many of us. So let's take a look at and put this into context. Human Rights Watch was actually founded by Jews in a response to human rights atrocities that were occurring around the world. And in fact, Robert Bernstein, who was one of the founders of Human Rights Watch, wrote an op-ed in 2006, just before he passed away, saying that he was extremely, extremely worried about the path that Human Rights Watch was heading down. He really sounded the alarm bell, saying that they were heading down this path of no return, seeming to side with some of the worst terror entities in the region with regards to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, seemed to be more, what's the word I'm looking for, empathetic towards the terror entities like Hamas. In fact, he used that very analogy. And sitting at the helm of Human Rights Watch for a good number of decades has been its director, Ken Roth. Ken Roth, who we worked out, Howard, I think you and I spoke about it a couple of months ago, at least 75% of his daily tweets are dedicated to excoriating the state of Israel. He has famously spoken about taking tea, or was it having coffee with Hezbollah? He has whitewashed terror. He has perpetuated some of the grossest anti-Semitic and anti-Israel tropes. He has spearheaded these fallacious studies and reports into accusations against the state of Israel, the Jewish state, while whitewashing the incitement, the acts of terror, the education for hate coming from the Palestinian camp. And he retires this week, and I think that was the whoop of joy that went around the world, notably led by a good friend of both you and I, Mr. Hillel Noyer.
Does his the legacy that he left, you know, obviously for the community, for the Jewish community, for people who support Israel, that's very clear. But what was his reputation like outside of this environment?
Well, that's a great question, and we have seen this strange shift by human rights organizations really into dangerous territory. And Human Rights Watch is not the only one. We have Amnesty International, who it was reported this week have lost 1,000 financial supporters as a result of them releasing that ludicrous report blaming Ukraine for civilian casualties. And siding with Russia, and Human Rights Watch is no different. You know, so many times I've seen people like you, myself, Hillel Noyer, Arsen Ostrovsky, call into question, why aren't you discussing issues like Uyghur Muslims being held in concentration camps in China? Why aren't you discussing the situation for Christians in Nigeria or what is happening in Eritrea? You have this profound, ludicrous focus on the Jewish state, using all this all this financing that you receive from people believing that they are supporting true human rights-based work. You're using that money to release these ridiculous, unfounded reports and really push an agenda. And we know that organizations like Human Rights Watch are backing the BDS movement. We know that they were at that 2001 conference against racism in the NGO track, you know, pushing that narrative. And we can see that they are part of a much more nefarious agenda that has nothing to do with human rights. And that's why, as you and I have said so often, the BDS movement actually market themselves with this very, very sexy, very emotive human rights based narrative. But we know that the intentions of these organizations are anything but.
And the other question, of course, is the, and I think it is very relevant, is it's all very well to say, well, you've over-focused on Israel, but there is a real cost to that, isn't there? Because you can't possibly focus on every human rights situation if you're only focusing on one. People have limited capacity, NGOs have limited capacity, limited attention, and there is no doubt that there is a material cost to human rights cases around the world if there is a obsessive focus in one area only. If you can't look away from that area, you've got to not see what's happening in other places.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure that there are many, many victims of human rights abuses, Yazidis, Christian Nigerians, Eritreans, Venezuelans, you know, the list goes on and on and on and on and on, that are saying, well, hang on, wait a minute, what about us? You know, who is speaking about the atrocities that we are enduring? You know, Syrians, Iranians. And of course, one wonders if you're not focusing on the human rights transgressions in these areas, we have to question, where is your funding coming from?
Well, already we've seen that, as you mentioned earlier, the fact that 1,000 donors have ceased to donate or withdrawn, and that's has nothing to do with Israel. It was that bizarre tweet or post blaming the Ukrainians for Russia's actions. Is there any sense of where that actually came from?
Well, the unbelievable thing about Amnesty International, and we've seen it with this report, and we've seen it with the report that they released against Israel on the 1st of February, is that they're very mysterious about who their actual researchers are. They don't disclose the names of their researchers, and they also are very, very, very mysterious about who their funders are. You know, they give a very vague, well, it's, you know, governments and some private people and some this and that. They won't say, well, you know, we get a certain amount of sponsorship from Russia and a certain amount of sponsorship from this place and a certain. So, you know, we can draw our own conclusions just based on how vague they are and the unwillingness of their directors like Ken Roth, like Amnesty's Agnes Callamard to answer questions. In fact, when they are put on the spot, when they are asked to disclose this information, the standard answer is, we're being trolled again. We're being trolled again by various interest bodies, you know, reading to that Zionists and other good people. And they completely avoid answering that question. So, you know, if you are listening to this and you are a supporter of Human Rights Watch or Amnesty International because you sincerely believe that they are out there to do the good job of calling out human rights transgressions, you have a right to ask them, where does their funding come from? And we don't want vague answers. We want specifics.
Absolutely right. Rolene, we don't have a lot of time, but you spent quite a bit of time at the conference, at the Zionist conference. Give us a quick overview. How was it?
Well, it was just simply, you know, I'm still trying to process it because this was a historical event. Make no doubt about it. 125 years since the founding of the World Zionist Organization, which really laid the foundation of the creation of the State of Israel, walking in the footsteps of Theodor Herzl. You know, I don't know how many people are aware of his story. He saw saw what happened to Alfred Dreyfus that motivated him to write articles and then books about the fact that Jews need a state. He wrote The Jewish State, he wrote Alt Neuland, Old New Land, laying his vision for a future state of Israel. And this very much was several days of looking at our history, celebrating it, but also discussing the challenges like Iran, like dealing with anti-Semitism. It all took place in Basel, in Switzerland. How's my accent there, Howard?
Amazing.
Basel.
You're basically Swiss now. Yeah,
I'm Swiss. Basically Swiss. Listen, I had some cheese that makes me Swiss.
Forget the cheese, get the passport.
You've never seen security like this in your life. Of course, we heard from BDS you demonstrating, but they didn't deter us. But really, it was something quite almost out of body to sit in the Stadt Casino, the site where the first conference was convened. And I actually have chills as I speak to sing Hatikva at the end of the night with 1,400 Jews, Zionists, our allies from around the world, including two sheikhs who were honored, one from the Jews community here, one from the Emirates. I mean, this poor man, he was
mobbed.
Absolutely mobbed by all of us just wanting, you know, to be in his presence, to express our gratitude. But just if Theodore Herzl could see what his dream, you know, he said, "Imtid Suen Zoagada, if you will, it is no dream." What that dream has brought to fruition, it is nothing less than a miracle.
Absolutely wonderful, Rolene Marks. That's where we leave it. It is 8 o'clock. Thank you, as always, wishing you a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll speak to you next week.